Around 10 years ago, Facebook wanted to build a new language from scratch that was designed to be secure and fast. Regulation, SEC was like, no, you can't build this. So this language still existed. And our thesis a year and a half ago was, we love the language. We weren't sure about the blockchain in the space that you were using it, and wanted to bring it to Ethereum and the EVM. Using Ethereum today is pretty poor. It's slow, it's clunky. There's $4.5 billion lost in attacks every year. So if you're using Ethereum, A, it's expensive, B, it's slow, and C, it's not safe. What Movement is doing is bringing this new language to Ethereum to make Ethereum go faster, more cheaper, as more importantly, safer. We're doing this through Facebook's new virtual machine, which is execution layer. So Movement is the first move EVM layer to Ethereum. All the benefits of EVM, all the benefits of Ethereum, all the benefits of Move.
Hey, Rushi, welcome to the Open Metaverse podcast.
Hey, Mehdi, how's it doing? How are you doing?
Rushi, to kick things off for our audience, can you explain Movement? Let's say you're explaining Movement to a five-year-old. How would you explain Movement to a five-year-old? Just so our audience get the gist.
Well, I'll first say Gmove and see if they pick it up. But if it wasn't that, so using Ethereum, which we're assuming people in this context know Ethereum, using Ethereum today, it's pretty poor. It's slow. It's clunky. There's $4.5 billion lost in attacks every year. So if you're using Ethereum, A, it's expensive. B, it's slow. And C, it's not safe. What Movement is doing is bringing this new language to Ethereum to make Ethereum go faster, more cheaper, as more importantly, safer. We're doing this through Facebook's Move Virtual Machine, which is execution layer. So around 10 years ago, Facebook wanted to build a new blockchain to support the Facebook app. So when I send money from New York to Thailand at the speed of light on the Facebook app, that could be possible to EVM. That wasn't really possible as well on the blockchains. So Facebook wanted to build a new language from scratch that was designed to be secure and fast. Unfortunately, due to regulation, the SEC was like, no, you can't build this. So this language still existed. And our thesis a year and a half ago was, we love the language. We weren't sure about the blockchain in the space that you were using it, and wanted to bring it to Ethereum and the EVM. So Movement is the first move EVM layer to an Ethereum. All the benefits of EVM, all the benefits of Ethereum, all the benefits of Move. And yeah, I think today we launched testnet last week, gearing up a mainnet. An ecosystem is coming live with over 9 teams raising capital, closing rounds, over $30 million in the moving system, over $200 million in TVL commits. So going to be one of the biggest ecosystems coming to market.
So Rushi, just taking a gear further, when I think about the thesis for Movement, there are the 3 big technical terms that come up. One is parallelization. Yep. The second one is decentralized sequencer. The third one is yep. M1, M2 chains. So for our audience, can you break it down all of these 3 elements? Maybe explain like you will explain to your mother.
Yeah. So first of all, M2 was changed as movement. So it's a move in L2, and M1 is a shared sequencer. So my mom probably wouldn't get what a shared sequencer is. So this would be an interesting one. But the move in L2 is what I just described, which is a fast, secure, cheap way to use Ethereum and settle on Ethereum. That's the main layer to the network. You can think of that as Optimism, which has this main flagship L2. What we believe is this network of rollups where each app, each major application, and we're seeing that today, right? Pudgy Penguins launching their own custom chain. Pretty much every major consumer app is leaning towards a custom chain because they want to own the block space, own the fees they're generating. So we believe in this multi-chain universe. But the issue is that blockchains are too fragmented. If you want to use like Optimism or Arbitrum or Space, it's very difficult to do bridging right now because I'm not going to get too technical here, but the way you essentially set up bridges, putting light clients in each L2, which is really, really problematic. So what Movement does is we have the main L2, which is Movement, and we have a shared sequencer, decentralized shared sequencer, which means there's multiple nodes sequencing the layer 2 as well as other layer 2s. So you can think of it like when you have 2 blockchains, instead of them being separate, and ordering their transactions separately, now you have one set of validators or nodes that are sequencing rollup A, rollup B, and rollup C. And that enables you to have interop between different L2s, as well as you have the ability to give your token value. In the past, most L2 tokens were meme coins, where there's governance tokens and don't really do much. But with our sequencer, all L2s can stake their token as part of the decentralized sequencer. So if I'm Arbitrum and Mehdi's Optimism, we'll both put $1 million worth of our token to A, secure the network, secure the sequencing network. And then B, it actually enables this thing called state finality, which I'm not going to get into, but enables interop between chains.
So I think this is a good segue into the business model of movement. So how would you describe the business model of movement?
Well, I think crypto revenue streams don't really make much sense anymore. But generally, I think our thesis is layer twos in the past lacked L1 premium, where L1s have the ability to launch their own token, have gas fees, stake the token, and position as Ethereum killer. And that's why generally valuations for L1s have been higher. L2s in the past are always seen as beta to Ethereum because there's no value pool mechanism for tokens. I think that changes with this multi-token staking model because now you have the ability for layer 2s to stake the token, sequence, have a set of nodes. They're the validators, essentially, for this layer 2, and have this network of rollups. So in theory, there's actually more value accrual to these tokens because movement itself is usually Ether gas, obviously, but still has buy pressure for the token because you just stake it to earn rewards and also get missions for other layer 2s in the network. So I think by being the first network to focus on staking, focus on multi-rollup revenue, the token will be much more precious.
You mentioned a multi-token. Can you double-click on that? The assumption there, let's say you'll have to stake movement token and there'll be, let's say, another L2. You'll also have to stake their token. Can you walk me through that?
So if I'm a validator, right now, if I want to participate in movement network, I can run a node. It's a decentralized sequencer. If I run the node, stake the move token, I'll earn emissions for that, obviously, and also earn sequencing fees from the movement L2. But then there's also other rollups that use a sequencer, like Nexio just announced a raise. It's a move VM on Bitcoin. What if I want to get Nexio emissions? So I'll stake Nex. What if I want to get Up Network, which is the mobile game, is mobile deep in L2, I'll stake Up token. So essentially, if I'm a participant, I can stake multiple tokens for one node. It's like multi-token staking to get emissions from all these L2s, but also to ensure that they can interop between L2s. So if I'm have asset, if I have like Nex BTC, on Nexio L2, I want to bridge that to the movement L2, I can use a decentralized sequencer for interop. So I think that's what the user experience looks like for anyone staking right now.
How many independent sequencer in your mind do we need to have decentralized sequencer base?
So I think like every major layer 2 has announced their data. So Optimism is using Superchain, which is like Optimism base and subsequent chains. Arbitrum's Orbit, so you have like Arbitrum, Zai, etc. ZK Sync is rolling out their Elastic chains, which is also similar, and like pretty much every major layer 2 is. So my thesis is like B2B shared sequencers make no sense. Like some of the groups saying like we have a really good shared sequencer, we'll offer it to people. No one really wants that. People want ecosystem shared sequencers where if I'm a roll up right now and I want to join the Superchain, it's a really good advantage for me to join Superchain because Optimism will co-treat me. I'll get marketing from Optimism Collective. I'll get connection to Base. I'll get all this Base push. So I think the vision is each shared sequencer network is its own country. We're entering this, I mean, crypto has always been politics where each founder is essentially a politician and then you have these kind of networks that are all different countries. They're all going to fight for like geopolitical power. So I think the end game is like you have three or four major countries, like right now you have three or four major countries in the world, and that's what drives like volume, transactions, etc. So I think we'll see the dust settle because infrastructure is kind of done, which we'll get into later. But in around 4 years or so, we should see the dust settle.
The thing I'm cautious of is, let's say if somebody goes toward a decentralized sequencer model, let's say there is another L2 out there that just doesn't believe in that, just has one sequencer, makes it really beefy. Do you think there's a massive trade-off with, let's say, straight bloat and state access? Do you think that kind of, let's say, having more than one sequencer makes the throughput slower? Like, what's your thought there?
Yes, you have decentralized sequencer that brings latency, but it's use case dependent, right? And that's what you market. For most rollups, this latency is not doesn't matter. If I'm a yield aggregator DeFi rollup, I don't really care if it's 0.1 milliseconds latency because I want liquidity. So for like some DeFi rollups, using a shared sequencer is great because you have like intra between your L2s. But if you're like a fully on-chain MMO and you really need throughput, then you should have a centralized sequencer to make it beefy. But I think the end game is when both coexist, where you can say like, if I'm a DeFi rollup, I want liquidity, I'll opt into the shared sequencer. If I'm a high throughput rollup, like gaming, some kind of deeper network, and I want to customize my node, if I'm a government agency and I need to customize my block space, one single point is fine for me, I'll have a centralized sequencer. Either case, you'll still be part of the collective. You'll still be part of the ecosystem and will represent you. Kind of like how Optimism Base work right now, where there's no decentralized sequencer yet, but it's still part of the Optimism Collective in like vibes basis, right? So I think that's the way we'd approach it, and we are approaching it. It's like, if you want your centralized sequencer, that's fine. We'll be part of the ecosystem.
Rishi mentioned there will be one L2 by movement. I think you called it M1, but then there will be other movement-based stacks across different ecosystem. Can you walk us through that? Like, what's your vision there? What's your thesis there? It kind of feels like you want to seed movement across everywhere in crypto.
Yeah, so we have like now like 10 DLers, which Animoca has funded some of these things. We have like 8 roll frameworks. So it's very easy to launch your own custom chain right now. You can do OP stack on Celestia, you can do OP stack, Arbitrum on IKDA, all these combinations. But everyone's still focusing on the EVM. It's like, my analogy is like when you customize a car, you have a perfect chassis, perfect brakes, but the engine is still from 1998, which means the car won't really go that fast. So what we're uniquely focused on is enhancing the VM experience. We're not the best at roll frameworks. We're not a good DA company. That's not bread and butter. We're focused on providing the best execution environment such that it exists everywhere. Actually, ties in chain abstraction because we believe in a world where this VM should exist everywhere, unified in token standards and user experiences. But anyways, I think what Move is bringing to the table is the ability for us to go to every system and be like, look, you want Move VM? You want Move? We can bring it to you. So for example, we just announced a Polygon partnership, which in theory should be a competitor, right? Like alternative L2s. But with Polygon, we're bringing the Move VM to Aguilar chain. So let's say, for example, we want a CDK chain. You can use the Move VM and interop between the Polygon POS chain and the Move L2 and have the interop. We're working with other L2s like Arbitrum to bring Move to Stylus and have people settle Move smart contracts on Stylus, right? So I think our end game is since we started, it was always Move everywhere with movement. We believe in thesis where Move is a language that is most secure, most performant, and we want to see it on every chain, even if it's not ours. So in the next 3 years, that's the main focus.
If I'm not mistaken, you also mentioned Bitcoin L2 next year. Is there a vision to bring Bitcoin L2, maybe, I don't know, Solana as well, Bearer Chain as well? Yep. Like, you can expand on that.
Yeah, so, I mean, Nexio announced a raise last week. It was a 2.2 million raise of Lattice. They're bringing the Move VM to Bitcoin, so we're super excited to work with NextBTC. So if you're a current whale right now with BTC, right now using BTC L2s kind of sucks. It's like slow confirmation times, pretty poor UX. What Nexio is doing is bringing the Move VM to Bitcoin. So you can use high throughput transactions on BTC. Kind of feels like Solana, but using Bitcoin liquidity. So you would directly wrap Bitcoin on an L2, get next BTC is an Aptos standard, and bridge that across L2s. So that's very exciting. And then for Solana, they already have Move as Solana's LLVM. They've been working on it for the last 3 years. I'm not sure where it is, but Solana is working on supporting that. And then we've obviously Smokey's a good friend, and we're looking at Bearer Move potentially. There's a few teams looking at that, but we're interested in that. But I think the main focus, not to fragment, is Ethereum ecosystem, Bitcoin ecosystem, getting Move as a standard there, and then expanding from there. I think there's Move on Ton coming, which we're excited for. They're announcing the race shortly as well.
Can you expand on that? Move on Ton?
I'm sure you guys know that like Ton is pretty hard to program in. Obviously, great ecosystem, great distribution. But there's teams coming out that's doing EVMs on Ton, obviously. And our thesis is people want to use Ton in a high throughput capacity. Like, you have all these Telegram apps that need to scale. Like, if you're doing a million taps per second, the EVM can't handle that. So we have a team called Paraton that's doing essentially a parallelized VM on Ton.
So Rishi, the vision over here is quite broad, and the TAM also seems quite large as well. How much have you raised thus far?
Today it's like 45 mil, 3.4 million pre-seed and 38 million Series A, and some other investments from exchanges and stuff. I think when we started off fundraising was difficult. We started the week after FTX. So when everyone thought crypto was a scam, it was going zero. So we struggled for like a year trying to figure out things. But I think we've hit a stride the last few months.
And Rishi, how do you plan to use that $45 million?
I think what we focused on is growing a team. So now we're 40 people deep, headquartered in San Francisco. And I think we're at a point where when Cooper and I started, it was just me and him in a college dorm. I had $300 in my bank account. And we were both eating ramen noodles every day because we couldn't afford like rent. And now it's like we have a team, had a strategy, had engineering research. So there's a lot of things moving on in movement. So it's super cool to see that grow in the last 6 to 12 months.
And what was that catalyst? I mean, after FTX, you mentioned there was a little bit of struggle. Then after that, it seemed like there was a period of few months where things worked out really well for you guys. What would you describe as the main catalyst that kind of helped you gain that threshold momentum?
Yeah, I think like when we started, like announced the pre-seed, it was still a bear market, but we just like hyper-marketed. Like I was constantly tweeting. I was going every podcast possible. And there was a podcast on the intro from Seb, one of our investors. I was talking about MoveVM, and we were pretty small back then. And one of our investors, like someone on Twitter reached out called George, who's from Dow 5. He reached out with a call, eventually put a check-in, and the fund also invested. So it was really cool to see that was a major catalyst, I would say, in like July, ETC last year. Was like our first major, I would say, tier one, tier two VC come in. And then from there, like, we used after the raise announcement, used that for momentum, kept grinding, kept marketing, going on AMAs, podcasts, building a personal brand. And people got to know me as an individual, right? I think it was less about Move when we started off. It was more about, okay, this bet on those founders, which is usually how it goes. And that's most cases where in the end, everyone's infrastructure, where everyone's building blocks, everyone promises 100,000 TPS. But it really comes down to like these like cult leaders, right? I think Smokey from Bear has done a great job of building his brand, building the Bear Chance to entity, and we're working on kind of bringing the face of Move in the next gen programming.
So you would say for anyone who is building up an infra project, just getting out there with AMAs, podcasts, speakerships is a very high ROI activity.
Yeah, I mean, people want to see your face as much as possible. If crypto is an attention game, the more attention you can create, the better it is. That's ultimately what drives people building on top of you because they want attention.
Yeah, speaking of attention, a lot of attention is on Movement Testnet.
Yep.
Yeah, we'd love to get some updates from you. Yeah, walk us through what has been happening.
So I'll start with the origin story. So if you use any testnet, like right now, it's like, okay, you have one bridge, one dex, and then like one tap game, which is really boring, honestly. Like we've done this for like last three cycles, same kind of bought the testnet, get numbers, and then like farm users. I think that gets nowhere, and we're at the point where infrastructure needs to rapidly innovate. So we took a step back and asked ourselves, what do users want? Users want a fun experience, something that's like not boring, not I don't have to go to the docs and like find this random dex and then potentially click on a bad link and get hacked. So make a really cool front end. So we built a Parthenon, which is a gamified front end. You can go testnet.movementlabs.xyz and you use the testnet right now, but it's a fully on-chain MMO basically where you play these apps, you do all these quests, you essentially earn points and trophies that builds up this Parthenon for this leaderboard. So you can compete with friends, try to complete more quests, compete for number one on the leaderboard, build up this Parthenon. So A, the goal is to gamify it. And then B, the goal is to provide a centralized environment where teams could upload their own quests and upload their own apps. In the past, if you wanted to join a testnet, you would say, okay, my dex is live on this testnet, but there's no way for me to get users to my testnet because, okay, if you're the fifth dex on like Monet or something like that, there's not much volume being drive because people go to the first dex or second dex. Whereas for Movement, all the apps list in the front end and stuff. So if you want to use any game or any app, there's 32 live apps right now. I think it's 35 as this call, but they're all listed there. So it's easy to navigate, easy UX. And I think the last thing is we've seen a pretty big surge in demand based on this. I think we notched like 13 million transactions in 1 week, 1.3 million unique addresses. So it shows the demand's there. We spent some time working on like quests and what, like how to manage quality there. But I think we got it down to a good point now.
And through that whole process, what were some of the lessons you learned and things that took you by surprise?
So I think one thing for Tessna is we made a permission list to start off with, which means if I'm an app, I can upload whatever requests I want. And the thesis was, okay, we'll do permission lists, let the apps do whatever. We got pretty wrecked in that because some of the apps had bad quests. Like some of the apps would be like, okay, follow the founder or like get to level 50 in Discord, which is not the best, right? Like people don't like doing that. People, it's like users don't like that. So like last 3 days I've been spending like, it's like talking to founders, like you can't do that. Now we have a review process that reviews all these quests and make, okay, we don't let that into the system. So we started off being permissionless as like Aegis of crypto, but sometimes you need permission, kind of watch over these things so that doesn't happen. So yeah, I think that's been a main takeaway. We spent like, I've been pretty vocal, I've been tweeting 5 times a day about like different ideas. And I think the community's been really receptive to that because I'm showing that we're building public. We're not perfect. We're going to make mistakes. We're going to keep iterating, but we're still listening, right? I think the biggest issue with these kind of campaigns is that crypto founders don't listen to the community. They'll have this idea, hear about it, hear bad feedback, and be like, oh, that's FUD, and leave it alone. But if it's FUD, it should be something that you guys are listening to, right? So if we get FUDed or some people don't like this idea, I'll listen to it, personally DM them, understand the problem, and then we literally fix it. So last few days, that's what we've been doing.
Yeah, that's interesting. So one thing unique about this cycle is ecosystem like Monad, Barrett Chain, even with Movement, we have projects building before the chain is even out there, right? Like before it's live, which wasn't the case in last cycle. And you mentioned on testnet there are about 35 projects. Can you through different vertical tell our audience a little bit about different projects being built on Movement? Maybe covering from DeFi to consumer to gaming to Deepin, some of the exciting projects you see that they should definitely check out or have a close tabs on.
Yep. So on DeFi, Meridian is our core lending protocol, our core staking and DEX. They just raised a big round, so announcing that this month, as well as Echelon, a lending protocol, also raised a big round, announcing this month. So I think those are kind of good DeFi apps to use. Walking through this right now. For on the consumer side, I would say Bracket, which is a fully on-chain prediction market. We have Henry, which is a commerce buyback app. So every time you use Amazon, use like any kind of shopping app like Walmart, you can earn points, like Henry Rewards points. That leads to future incentives for shopping, which is really cool. So think Honey, but on-chain. And then there's a few like SocialFi apps, which is like Move with Friends, which is like a friend tech version. So we have a bunch of meme community talking about and trading each other tokens, which is funny. Infinite Seas is a fully on-chain maritime MMO. So think like battleships, but on-chain, and like the UX is pretty slick for that. And yeah, I think they have like 4 perp dexes, like Overlay, Zebra, so you can test out those apps. Seekers is like a TCG game, so you can collect trading cards to a game, like game platforms. And there's obviously a few Telegram apps, like Momo, which is from Rise, that you can tap the Momo and earn points. And then you have Monsters, which is on the Telegram tap up. So kind of a mix of DeFi, gaming, Telegram apps, on-chain apps. So.
And maybe a message for some of the builders who might be listening to this podcast. What are some of the things that you will like there to be there on Movement L2? Some of the stuff you think the ecosystem is lacking at the moment, and this could be a plea towards them building it in a permissionless way.
Yeah, I think what we're focusing on is net new use cases, right? Which every chain has been saying for the last 3 cycles, but I think Deepin is a category that's set to break. I'm actually going to the Deepin Summit later today, but we're seeing a lot of good innovation on Solana for Deepin because high throughput blockchains enable Deepin. So we're going to do a lot of work with project. We have Up Network, which is kind of our flagship Deepin project that brings mobile phones to the Movement chain. So we have Movement Phone with pre-installed wallets, light nodes, etc. So very excited about the team. So Deepin in various verticals, as well as consumer focus apps. So I know like Pumped Up Fun and Variance are interesting, but I feel like that's a bit saturated. We already have like Moved Up Fun and stuff. But I think it'd be interesting to have more consumer focus apps, things that the retail and Gen Z population can understand. My thesis is, and I think Solana is heading this, is Gen Z marketing is the future. The difference between Solana and Ethereum right now is Solana understands this, and you can look at their recent videos, right? Very, very high production quality, very Gen Z focused. While Ethereum still is focused on white papers and how validity aligned you are. And you can see like how that changes perception, right? Because now all the cool kids, all the influencers, they're using Solana. They're not using the ZK EVM based L4.
Do you think there is a more than 60%, 50% probability that Solana takes over Ethereum based on this thesis or viewpoint?
Yeah, so I've been saying this. I definitely think Ethereum is a point where it might lose its spot. Solana is definitely challenging it. I don't think on price action, maybe I'm unsure because Ethereum is still a great asset, hasn't battle tested multiple cycles, has survived. While Solana is kind of the first major cycle after the bounce back, so we'll see like if the price action completely decreases after the bear. So today on price action, can't really comment, but I think from users, Solana will overtake Ethereum. I think it's more than 60% shot. Where the future consumer, the future of Deepin, the future of insert any actual app that needs block space will be built on Solana just because of the community, just because Tolly is an amazing founder, because the Solana Foundation is an amazing team, and they know how to focus on the Gen Z and younger audiences. Well, I don't think Ethereum is focused on that.
So I'll show you my thesis about Deepin. Like, I feel like this could be a category for mass adoption, because right now what happens is you go to exchange, you deposit some money, you buy a token for gas fees, and then you interact with blockchain. I feel like with Deepin, there could be point where, let's say, you're doing some sort of a useful work in the world and automatically you get free tokens. And that could be a gateway for people to experiment on chain without having to go through that tedious process of on-ramping, converting into gas tokens, then experimenting with blockchain. So I think that's how I'm thinking about it. I feel like it could be a Trojan horse for mass adoption because people get free tokens and then they realize, oh shit, there is NFTs, there is DeFi, there is gaming, and they just experiment and do degen stuff and fall in love with Web3. Yeah, so that's how I think about Deepin.
Yep.
So earlier you mentioned the 35 projects building on movement, 30 million transactions. I'm sure, again, you might be having some discussion with different exchanges. We'd love to learn what are some of the listing trend you are learning as you speak with these exchanges, or maybe even other founders who are going through the same process.
Yep. I'll focus more on the founders because that's probably more kosher. But generally, I'd say is infrastructure has gone through a crisis motorcycle. If you look at any alt, no alt has done well in the cycle besides Solana and maybe like one other, Nikton. The rest have kind of went down mostly the cycle, which is really odd and hasn't been in any of the cycle. Instead, meme coins have obviously ripped, besides like ETH, SOL, BTC, TON, and maybe a few other tokens, everything else has gone down. So infrastructure and alts are in a very tricky situation for NLPs are having difficulty justifying that. So naturally, valuations are coming down for infrastructure, which actually as infra founder, I really like because we don't need the fifth ZK EVM L4. And then that's sort of like from my go-to-market point of view, something that every founder is thinking of is the high float, low FTV thing doesn't work anymore. Look at any token launch in the last 3 months and you can see nothing but red. Because retail doesn't want to buy a VC-backed $10 billion token that's going to go to like $1 billion the next month. So I think the main market trend is going back to Solana's roots. Or I think we're going back to like how the original token launches went. Solana launched 60 cents. People bought it. Obviously, it wasn't the best valuation then, but people made a shit ton of money. And ultimately, the best way to build any kind of community is make people rich, create wealth creation effects. You can't do that if you launch your token at $10 billion because there's fundamentally no way it's going to go unless you're somehow Jesus. You go to like 20, 30 billion, right? And even then, it's a 2-3x. Where Solana is like people 1,000x, people 5,000x, which I don't know if we can replicate that. And be honest, I don't think we can ever get back to Solana's ICO days because of regulation stuff. But getting as close to that as possible, where launch to get fair valuations. I think Layer Zero did a great job of this recently, where they launched a relatively fair valuation. The market actually pumped it pretty well. And the chart's pretty healthy. People are generally happy, good community, and it's long-term like sustainability. Same thing with infra projects like ourselves. The valuation is pretty important because you want to open at a fair price. So that's what we're all thinking about, making sure we can talk with different shareholders and managing expectations. Because ultimately, you don't want to let down your community.
So Rushi, if you were not building movement right now, what would be something else that you'll be working on, given the market we are in, given some of the trends you're seeing?
Well, first, I would build on Solana. I love Solana. I'm such a I've been a Tully fanboy for the last like 3 years. I think Tully is the best founder in the space by far. Really gets it. Very level minded. Great guy. I've actually met him once in person. I don't think he knows me, but like on Twitter, obviously we talk. But yeah, I think like Solana is the best you can build on. I would probably build some kind of deepin project, just because I think that's where the puck's skating. Where people want to like markets, even like tokens, they want to see like real use cases and new consumers coming, bring Web2 audiences in. So I do some kind of like Gen Z deepin play. Because one thing that I bring to the table that other people don't is like I'm young, right? Like I have fresh blood. I kind of know what the retard high schoolers want, and try to bring something that. And that's even like we're already existing building. Like we have like more DeFi OGs and people who handle that. But my focus is how do we bring cool shit to the table that no one else can think about. So focus more on special projects these days. But
yeah, so I have asked you this question in like different ways, but I'm gonna try again. Market trends. So yeah. I know you're like speaking with other founders. I know you also speak with a lot of different VCs and even other projects. Apart from Deepin and old VMs, what are some of the market trends you are seeing and you are excited about?
Well, market trends, restaking was probably the big one in this category, this cycle, but we'll see how it goes. So there's one big launch coming next month that will probably dictate if this category still exists. Some of the thesis that generally restaking lacks ecosystem, like there's not much to do with restaking with like alt VMs or Deepin. You can build ecosystem, you can get people excited, you get users. With restaking, it's ultimately just yield. So the cycle started off with yield focus. You had Blast, you had Athena, you had these major players. But then the issue is when market prices nuke, it's very difficult to justify yield. For example, like if you're doing this TVL for points program, points was a hot shit. The cycle when it started off, and now it's dead because expectations are too high. If you had 2 billion TVL from points, there's simply no way, especially in not the best markets, that your token can incentivize that capital. So fundamentally, you'll let down your community always. So I think points are gone. I think Deepin consumers obviously what's hot right now, but I think that's not the best way to explain it. Like what is Deepin, right? Deepin just means use cases. Consumer just means use cases. It just means things that is legit and not some scam L4. So I think that's where puck's skating. There's also been like Bitcoin ecosystem projects like Babylon, LSTs and stuff. I'm not too in the Bitcoin space. I don't really understand it. I think Babylon is probably category leader there, but TBD on if people actually care. Yeah, I was like, what I'm really focused on is like just these getting web 2 audiences or like Gen Z audiences in a crypto, which I think is only possible through Deepin and consumer Deepin social, while like restaking AI, I mean certain parts of AI is fine, but like these really tech heavy concepts that only crypto natives understand, I think doesn't really make much sense anymore and people aren't really excited.
If you think about it, I feel like restaking is sort of Deepin. Yeah. Deepin for trust, but yeah, kind of mitigates other projects or other middleware to launch token and rely on Ethereum.
I mean, Deepins are also just blockchains, right? Think about like what L1 is. It's a bunch of nodes that are coordinated. So Deepin is just anything, everything.
Yeah. Amazing. Loving the conversation here. Rushi, I think the final segment of the podcast is a rapid fire round. So I'm going to ask you questions. We'll appreciate like brief responses. First question, are tier one VCs overrated in crypto?
No, I don't think they're overrated because capital is abundant throughout crypto. Really what you need from a VC is market signal and go-to-market help. So tier one VCs, I would say, are not overrated.
Without naming the VC, what was the biggest help a VC has done in your cap table?
Honestly, just like therapy. When stuff doesn't happen well, and shit hits the fan or something goes wrong, you want someone to call. I want to shout out WN from Primitive Ventures. She's been a close friend, very helpful. I text her every day. Even like Smokey, I text every day. So having people in your corner to like just talk to and get thoughts is very important.
What's a pet peeve in Web3?
Circle jerking. Just like use this concept that no one understands besides five people in the room, throwing millions at it, and then not getting anywhere. So I think circle jerking is the brand.
Last thing you searched on ChatGPT or Google?
Flights to San Francisco.
Last question before we conclude the podcast. Actually, question I should have asked you but didn't.
When may net? End this year.
Thank you, Rishi. This was great. Thank you for your time. I learned a lot, and I'm really excited about Movement. Really excited about the launch of Mainnet and the token. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Eddie. Really appreciate your time.
This podcast is for information purposes only and should not be considered as financial advice. Any opinions provided in this podcast reflect the views of the speakers only.